Dive deep with us into the trenches of professional sports. From the electric charge of the hardwood to icy battles, the strategic plays, and to the global passion, we cover it all where no sport is left behind.
Join your hosts, Justin Williams, and myself, Nee Wallace Bruce, as we break down game strategies, dissect play performances, and give you the insider scoop on what's happening both on and off the field of play. We are the Pro Sports Podcasters. Make sure you subscribe and leave a review. Welcome back to the Pro Sports Podcasters. I'm your host, Mr. Niels Bruce. I am alone in terms of hosting, but I am not alone in terms of my guests. Make sure you leave a review and subscribe to the podcast, by the way. We're on all the audio platforms, so definitely subscribe, leave a review. It really helps us with our engagement. Now, on to our guests. I am joining you from Toronto, where it is cold, but our guests are joining you from warm Bali, Indonesia. Two guests, actually. That's right. We get two guests today. We got Gianni Suba from 1FC, and he is the founder of the Block Gym in Bali. And also joining us is Ian Lara, the chef for the fighters, who is also in partnership with Gianni at the Block. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I'm great. Even better now that you're here. Gianni, let's just start off with you first. How did you get into MMA? Was that a dream of yours, or tell us a little bit more about that pathway?
MMA, I think it all started in martial arts, I guess, when I was 9 years old. I think it was a long time, obviously, fan, and always pushed my mom to put us into martial arts, but it wasn't until age 9 that we found Taekwondo, my brother, my sister, and myself, and then transitioned into boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, wrestling when I was 15 years old when I moved back to the States. And then, yeah, kept training, had an amateur fight, moved back to Asia at the time when one championship first came up, and then that was it. I had my debut when I was 19 years old in 2012, and then never looked back.
Fantastic. Yeah, and you had quite a great record too as a fighter. Now, the transition to becoming a media personality and announcer for ONE, how did that come about? Did someone tap you on the shoulder as you were fighting, or was that something that you wanted to do as you were in the cage?
No, to be honest, it was never something that I wanted to do per se. I think I'm still very young. I'm only 31 years old. I always thought it was something I would be interested in when I finished my fighting career, but due to a medical issue, I had to stop fighting at the age of 26, and then that's when I tried to look at the other options, staying involved in the sport. That's when I reached out to Bo in production. I won championship, asked for an opportunity, and that's how it started. I've proved myself, and now I'm here. It's been how many years now? 2019, I'd say I started commentating. Now it's 2024. It's been a couple of years.
Yeah, and ONE is going from good to great. We spoke with Mitch Chilson not too long ago, and yeah, every week when we see the fights, it's always big crowds out there across Asia, and it seems like there's more fighters being brought on. There's new locations where the fights are taking place. I see that Qatar is also up next. Tell us a little bit more about that and what might be happening in Australia down the line.
Yeah, so at the moment, there's ONE Friday Fights, the show to find the next superstar, the next global superstar that could be a world champion. There's so many young guys that have came out of the show already. Jojo Ghazali, Alif, there's Benjijo, who just picked up the world title. That's the show every Friday, and then these guys are hungry, man. They fight like they're starving, and they give everything. That's what makes that show so exciting. And then you have the prime shows or ONE Fight Nights where all the best guys in the world compete on. And like you said, they just went to Japan. They're having the first ever show in Qatar. They're going back to the States later on in the year. So it's a lot of exciting times and things to look forward to.
no doubt about it. Now, on a more local scale, there's things to look forward to with the block. How did you and Chef Ian link up initially?
That's a long story. How do we link up? I got a message from Chef Hilarious here when I was, I think, 19 years old after I had my first fight in one championship. Ian used to live in Malaysia for about 6-7 years.
Yeah.
6 years, and then he was back in Vegas. He sent me a message saying, hey, it's good to see Malaysian kids on the bigger shows. You're doing a good job. I was like, oh, this guy's weird. Why is he messaging me? Never talked to him in my life. Like, all right, cool. But then my brother actually got to go meet him first. My brother fought on the Malaysian national team for the UMAC national team. It's the amateur worlds in Vegas. And then he got to meet Ian. And then Ian made his way to Bali with Tiffany Vance, who was a glory kickboxer. Well, a Lion fight world champion at the time. And that's how we linked up. We've been together for a long time. He's helped me with my camps. I've seen him grow into the star nutritionist that he is today. And then it only made sense. Like our path got lined up together. And now we got a good group of people that we have together. We have Indonesian partners, Farid Surya, Wally Teo, we also have Todd Gosondi, so many guys here, A Studios, who helped us design the place. Just a solid team of people here that helped us with the block.
Yeah, amazing. That's an awesome story to hear built from the ground up like that. Before I switch to Ian, just real quick, you're from Malaysia. Which part of Malaysia were you based?
Well, I was born in Hawaii. My mom's Malaysian, my dad's Nepalese. I grew up in Kuala Lumpur, kind of in the heart of the city, I would say. Jalan Ipoh when I was younger, but I've been going into real cities here. And then, my parents live near, the Duta'imas area. But again, this is very specific. Unless you're in Malaysia, you don't know what it is.
No, it's funny you mentioned that. I went to university with a lot of people from Malaysia and from KL. I only got to visit Eastern Malaysia. I only got to Sarawak and Sabah.
Beautiful place.
Exactly. Very natural. The food, which we're going to get to later on, is amazing. But KL, I've only passed the lovely airport in transit, so I have to get
there. You got to make your way back out here, man.
I know. I've got to see the trunks. I know. There's a lot I need to see. Bali as well. But speaking of Bali, Chef Ian, you have a restaurant at the block. And it's growing. You're also a chef to the fighters. How did that begin? How did you become, I guess, the nutritionist, the chef, the jack of all trades, if you will?
Yeah, definitely, man. It was a pretty crazy story. First to start out, I was a huge UFC fan. Grew up pretty much watching every single fight in high school. I remember at the time they had like the Facebook prelims, so like the UFC fights had like special Facebook prelims, so like the early fights would be on Facebook, and I would just religiously watch all these fights, and I started thinking like, I didn't want to fight, like I had no interest. I was like 110 pounds soaking wet at like 6'2", so like I knew that like I didn't have quite the frame. Just the mindset to be able to, you know, be a fighter, but I wanted to be a part of it, and so then I started kind of following it at a deeper level where I saw these guys would be weighing in, so I kind of looked deeper into that and realized that there was a market for having guys with knowledgeable nutrition, and cooking and food was like a huge passion of mine growing up in Malaysia. Food's such a big part of the culture there that like whenever we had any gatherings, food was always kind of like the centerpiece to those gatherings. So that's kind of where like my mind, it kind of sparked the idea if there's any way I can do something where I can incorporate food and nutrition into working with these guys, maybe I could build a career of it. And finished high school, went to college, and studied some nutrition, and got a random message from a chef that I was following out in Thailand. He was the Chef and Tiger Muay Thai. And I was following, like, they used to do these, well, I think they still do them, but they were doing these tryouts that got super popular on YouTube. There was a whole series of guys from all over the world coming and competing for scholarships at Tiger Muay Thai. So that kind of opened my eyes to, like, this part of the world as being, you know, a mixed martial arts hotbed in a sense where it was coming here and it was starting to grow and all these high-level guys were trying to make it. And he offered me an opportunity to come intern for him at Tiger Muay Thai. So I left school. I was bussing tables at a pizza place in Vegas. I went in the next day, quit my job, sold my car, and bought a one-way ticket to Phuket, Thailand. And I lived at the fighter dorms and tried to make this dream into a reality of working with the best guys in the world. At the time, it seemed like it was like a, you know, a pipe dream that, like, oh, it'd be, I had no idea how to approach it, but the goal was to work with the best guys in the world. But I had no idea of the journey, nor what it would take to kind of get to the position that we're in today. But yeah, that's kind of the roots of what kind of spun all this off.
Nice. Now, you mentioned that you spent time in Malaysia as well. Was that in KL as well?
Say that one more time.
You mentioned that you spent time in Malaysia. Was that also in Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah, it was also in Kuala Lumpur. My parents actually taught at the international school there, so we were always on the move. But we spent most of my young youth and then middle school through most of high school in KL. So never met, I didn't know Gianni. I mean, Gianni was there, but yeah, we didn't know each other at the time.
That's understandable. KL is a big city.
Yeah.
I didn't live the international school life, so
I definitely would have beat him up at that time.
No.
That would have been like your small window of opportunity to beat him up, because I'm sure that ain't happening now.
I would have taken it, and I would have still, money.
What might have been? Sliding doors. Anyway,
right.
Now you're a chef, so chef is a pretty high pressure job. I don't think people appreciate that enough. Like, you gotta not only cook food in a time frame, but you also gotta curate the menu, make sure it's up to scratch. You gotta manage costs, all those things. I'm preaching to the choir here, but do you feel an added pressure of doing these meal plans for fighters, given the camps that they're in?
I mean, in terms of the pressure, I think that at one time I definitely did feel it. I try not to let, like, the magnitude of the fight itself kind of dictate what I do, just because it's the same process regardless of how big, you know, how big a fight it is. Like, it stays the same. You know, just because it's a bigger fight doesn't mean, like, anything really changes in terms of, like, the approach. But it is definitely a high pressure career in terms of, like, working in the kitchen and all that. And I used to bus tables. I used to wash dishes. So I've been in that environment, and I realized pretty early that wasn't what I wanted to do in terms of, like, you know, I didn't want to live in kitchens, because I just had a bunch of chefs that I worked for that were, like, functioning alcoholics and, like, chain smoking cigarette kind of dudes. So it was, like, the exact opposite of what I wanted to do. But in terms of all the pressure, I definitely lean into all that. Like, I chose a very high-pressure career, and it's not easy to, you know, one, have clients that are, you know, fighting on one of the world's biggest stages, but it's also people I care about, you know. So at the end of the day, I'm trying to put them in the best position possible to go out there and be successful. And it's a very, you know, violent and unforgiving sport. So I take it very, very seriously, because it's one of those things that I want to put my best foot forward and give everything I have. Because if I can make them just a little bit better, the odds of them going out there and doing their thing and, you know, implementing their game plan and, you know, beating these other guys and girls is the goal. So that's always my approach. It definitely does it is a pressure cooker, but I love it for the most part. You know, there's definitely times where I have to chill and just sit back and watch the fights with the fan. But there's nothing like going to the fights and watching someone that you've worked, you know, the past 10, 12 weeks with, go and, you know, try to make their dreams a reality of being a world champion.
Absolutely. Yeah, food obviously must be a passion for you. So, but I get the sense that this is something that you love, as opposed to, now I think you'll understand when I go down this direction. Like, it's not like you're doing dinner service and you're cooking for 200 people who are banging the table demanding where their food's at. Like, you're cooking for someone who's also doing what they love, and you're both trying to reach that. You're helping them to reach their goal, and I guess there's a sense of their success is your success in a way.
Exactly, and it's a whole journey with that too. Like, I realized early on that, like, I didn't want to just be living in a kitchen, and I did want to find a way to, you know, food's the way I show, you know, it's like my love language, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the one thing that I have control over, that I can feel like I put all these years into, and it's just like a fighter going out there and showing his skill set. Like, this is the way I show my skill set, and I just found a way to, you know, make it a career. And you know, mixed all my passions together with food and, like, being in, you know, MMA and travel, and it's pretty crazy that I've built a crazy career of it, and now it's kind of all come together here in Bali, and, you know, we're building something special here. We're building a special culture, and any time that you could go into business with people, you know, you'd go to war with is a special time. You know, me and Gianni have been through a lot together, and the fact that we can, you know, we're in our early 30s and we're business owners, and, you know, we're doing it at the highest level. Gianni's, you know, flying to Thailand pretty much every single weekend and commentating on some of the biggest fights, and, you know, I'm part of some of the biggest fights in the UFC, and it all comes back to Bali, and, like, we have the block now, and, like, bringing all the, you know, all the connections and all the contacts and all the relationships we've built over the years. You know, we can really build Bali into the next hotbed of MMA and build Indonesian champions, and, you know, it's gonna be a special time over the next few years here, and I really do think we're gonna change the whole culture, not just in Indonesia, but we're gonna be one of the best gyms in the world, without a doubt.
I agree with that, and it's a beautiful thing that, yeah, like you said, you're in the effectively in the trenches with someone that you know who's also a friend, so you know that when the chips are down, they're gonna be there fighting with you. They're not gonna just disappear at the first sign of adversity. So, yeah, it's refreshing to hear that, and I wish both of you well in all that success. Now, I guess talking about the project that is the block in Bali, tell us a little bit about what folks can expect from the restaurant when they head out there.
The restaurant's going to be super special. One, because it's going to be the only place in the world where you can have, like, a fighter's favorite signature dish that I've made for him in camp for fighting for world titles. And we've incorporated it into the menu. So we have a signature bowl option on our menu. So guys like Daniel Cormier, Jamal Hill, Cody Garbrandt, Max Holloway, guys I've worked with over the years, and we've incorporated their favorite meals that I made for them in camp specific to them, and we've tailored it kind of for performance. Well, they were already tailored for performance, but now we've kind of just made it so it's available to the general public. And so people can come in, you know, they can box, they can grapple, and they can come upstairs and they can eat, you know, what their favorite fighter they've fought in for, you know, world titles over the past 2 years. So that's super unique in the sense of I don't know anywhere else in the world that, you know, can offer that kind of menu with that type of, you know, track record. And then we'll have an awesome kind of create your own menu where everything, we have all different types of protein you can pick, all homemade sauces. We really want to go for, like, a farm to block concept where everything is made in-house, everything's either local, high quality ingredients tailored for performance, but minimal processing in terms of additives and stuff like that. It's all handmade stuff, all made with love, and it's, yeah, it's not your normal diet food, but to say that. You're not going to get boiled chicken and spinach and leave feeling like you're hungrier than you came. So I'm excited for people to be able to see, you know, kind of what I've been, you know, cultivating over the past, you know, 10 years of being in this game. You know, Gianni had to be my guinea pig early in the early stages of this. So I'm excited for him to actually be able to see the what 10 years of cooking for you know, a bunch of different fighters over the years. Yeah, Gianni kind of had it rough at first because I was the best cook in the world 8-9 years ago when I first started working with Gianni.
We made it work. We made it work. All I can say is now it's delicious. The other day we went through a menu test. I can't wait to be able to eat this every day. Couldn't say that about the food 7-8 years ago, but today, at this time, like, yeah, chef has been chefing.
Menu testing sounds like a dream job, by the way. If you ever need a menu tester, let me know. I can be a menu tester. I can do some of that. I can do that. I can do that for a while. Exactly. Get me out there. Let me get in on that. Now, Johnny, you've helped. Well, you and Ian, you've lifted the boats here. You've created this fleet that is the block. How did that idea, that concept, come to life?
Well, I think, like Ian said, we've been in the game for so long. You know, I started training since I was 9 years old, fought professionally for about 8 years, and then coaching now for the better part of like 4-5 years now, working with many world champions, professionals, white collar guys even as well. So we looked at, again, for us it was a dream when I was 15 years old, I was looking at what gym was there out there. At the time, it was only Tiger Muay Thai. You know? Mm-hmm. I remember being 15, thinking, it would be nice to be able to go out to Tiger Muay Thai and train one. And now to be in a position to have our own destination gym, to tailor it, to have our experiences, and use the network of people that we have to grow it together, to be, you know, the next big destination gym. That's what it's really all about. More than anything, we designed the whole facility for professionals, for a high-level training camp, from the recovery area, the iceberg, the saunas, to the conditioning area, to the jiu-jitsu room, to the cage and the ring. You know, everything has been designed for a high-level training camp. So we want to cater to those people, but also cater to the expats and the people that are living here in Bali and grow that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's how that idea came about.
I get it. So it's kind of like you're meeting a need, like you're filling a gap in the market. Would you say that
And the big thing for us as well, we also wanted to be a little bit different with from branding to the design of the place. One of our good friends, Todd Zenya at A Studios, they helped us design this beautiful facility. Branding is a little bit more clean. Wanted to stay away from a classic. Your fight team, your fight club, your MMA gym, you know what I mean? We wanted to be a little bit cleaner, a little bit, you know, more polished.
Mm, I hear that. Just like a restaurant, like you want to set yourself apart from the rest. I get that.
Exactly.
I get that. Now, just in terms of the local market, you're in Bali, which is unique in itself compared to the rest of Indonesia, but what's the MMA landscape like in Bali and in Indonesia? Is it big there? Is it growing? What's it like?
I would say MMA is growing. There's a few good shows now in Bali. Obviously, there's now a few bigger gyms that have international level fighters that are fighting on bigger shows in the world. There's people now coming in for camps from all over the world. There's been shows now. More and more shows are popping up. More and more opportunities there are for people to come in and fight. And Bali is really becoming like you can't say a second Thailand, because Thailand is so unique. It has its history. They have things that we cannot replace. But Bali has its own magic, its own charm, and we have our own set of talented and skilled individuals over here that make it its own unique experience, and that's why we really want to give you that fight camp
training camp experience in Bali, a little bit different to Thailand, vastly different to Thailand, but still high-level training in a beautiful place.
100%, 100%. You're listening to the ProSource Podcasters with Ian Larios and Gianni Suba. I am your host, Mr. Nemolis Bruce, and we're talking about the Block Gym in Bali. Now, Gianni, could you say that could you see yourself or other members of the Block becoming, I guess, scouts for some of the competitions like ONE, like PFL, UFC, other, and some of the other promotions going on?
I don't know about scout. I don't know if scout is the correct word. I think what we do in any good gym, they have connections to these organizations, so we kind of manage the fighters that are here and that train and represent us. Like Ian said, he close ties to the UFC. We have ties to ONE Championship, PFL, PEX, shows in Abu Dhabi. There's so many shows that we've been able to go coach, corner, fight, and now to have that and have a stable of fighters in there, we have the opportunity to open doors for them in that sense.
Okay, cool. No, definitely going to watch this space and see how it plays out. I just wanted to ask you quickly about ONE, because there has been some talk of some fights being in North America or America specifically. Do you know what that looks like for 2024?
I can't tell you the exact dates, but I know, I'm pretty sure they're going to New Orleans and going back to Denver last year. Denver was a big success for ONE. This year they're going, I'm pretty sure it's New Orleans and Denver again. I'm not sure the timeline. It could be June and September, but I could be wrong with the dates. But they definitely have two shows in America this year.
Okay. Yeah, Denver makes perfect sense. I mean, so many fighters are training up there as it is, and it's that'll be a seamless camp. That's yeah, I can totally see that being success again. Chef Ian.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I believe you grew up in Nevada. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, tell us, if I'm flying from Asia to the U.S. or North America, what are some things I should be doing to try and deal with the jet lag?
Oof, I always tell guys, as soon as they get in sweat, whether you can get in a sauna, get on a treadmill, just get that heart rate up, break that first sweat, regardless of how tired you are, especially if it's in the afternoon and you feel like it's like your bedtime, gut it out. Like, try, like, let's say you get in at 10 a.m. and you're exhausted, do everything in your power to at least make it to like 9 p.m. Slam some water, get a sweat in, get some electrolytes in, and I personally think that that's the way to beat it, because I beat it this time on my way over here. I got in at 3 p.m., was wrecked, didn't really sleep on the flight, came in, got a sweat in at the Block, hydrated up, and got a good meal in. I made it to like 9:30, and then I woke up the next morning at like 6, which is typically when I wake up. And I haven't been jet lagged since I got here. And it's a 14-hour, you know, time difference between here and where I was in the States. So that is my that's my way of typically trying to beat it. But yeah, sweat, hydrate, and regardless of when you get in, regardless of how tired you are, try to make it to like a reasonable bedtime. The naps turn into like you sleeping 4 or 5 hours. You know, they aren't naps if you sleep that long midday and then you're playing catch up for weeks. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Now, Ian, there's a lot of talk in MMA circles about weight maintenance, making the cut for the fight. Some fighters have difficulty with this, and some, it appears on the surface like they may not have tried to make weight. What are your thoughts on that as a nutritionist?
Yeah, it's always tough. It's always tough to see guys miss weight. One, there's a lot of variables that go into it. You know, a lot of the time when guys do miss weight, there's obviously a reason. It does sometimes look like they may have not tried. In some cases, that may be true. but I say 95% of the time, a lot of those dudes are killing themselves. A lot of those girls, big guys, are killing themselves to make that weight. Whether it was an injury during fight camp, I mean, at the end of the day, if you sign a contract to make a specific weight, it's just like any other contract. That's the way you need to make, regardless. You know, plain and simple. If your opponent made weight, you got to make weight. But just from what I've seen and I've personally experienced, there's a lot of variables that go into that. One, the way it should be structured is fight camps are about losing the weight. Fight week itself is about losing water. So if guys come into fight week, let's say they're fighting at 145 pounds, and they come into fight week, you know, 165 pounds. You know, they're 20 pounds overweight. What may look like someone that's actually 20 pounds overweight, they're not losing actual, like, body mass, right? They're not losing 20 pounds of muscle or 20 pounds of fat that week. It's water weight. Obviously, our bodies are mostly made of water. So some guys can push that 20 pounds off easy, you know? Depends on how much muscle mass they have. Obviously, muscle holds water. Some people may not know that, but muscle holds water. And the more muscle mass you have, the easier it is, in theory, to let go of that water. But, I mean, on paper, too, 20 pounds is 20 pounds. So there's, let's say, you know, someone oversleeps. Someone's having a rough time. Someone's body just changes. You know, let's say they used to fight at, you know, they fought at featherweight since they're 18 years old and they're 30 years old now. There's huge changes that happen within the body of someone that, you know, ages, you know, 12 years. So if they try to keep making that same weight, the body changes. Their body's going to try to fight the fact that they've been trying to push this weight off. So there's a lot of variables. Obviously, on paper, guys shouldn't be missing weight, but it happens all the time. That's the reason I have a job most of the time, is because guys that have issues controlling their weight or just want someone to help them with performance and make it more efficient, because we're in a sport where size advantage is a huge thing. It's not like in boxing where there's no grappling, but if someone's on top of you that's bigger than you, odds are there's an advantage. So that's why guys cut weight differently in MMA than they do in boxing sports. So, I mean, kind of to close off this rant, I don't know if I answered the question, but weight cutting is a huge issue in the sport, and if it's not addressed properly, it's very dangerous. You know, people lost their lives doing it, and at the end of the day, it's something that can be, you know, can be fixed if the culture changes. So there's a lot of great coaches out there that I've personally worked with. I myself am trying to, you know, have guys not have those drastic weight cuts and really focus on weight management throughout the year, be professional, you know, be professional athletes. Really approach this like it's your job, because it is. That's your first job, is to show up and make weight. So if these guys aren't taking that aspect of their career seriously, it's eventually going to come and bite them in the ass, or it's going to affect them. It's going to affect their performance. So I always tell young fighters, build your relationship with food early. Learn how to properly portion control. Learn how your body responds to certain foods. And approach it like any professional athlete. You know, it's your job to make weight. There's not very many sports where you have to do that. But that's just, you know, the nature of the beast that we're in right now is, in a weight class sport, you got to step on that scale at the contract that, you know, the contract of weight you sign. So at the end of the day, you know, people are always going to try to find ways around it, but the scale never lies. So if you don't do the work you've been supposed to be putting in, or you know, been cutting corners, it's going to show. So I really try to tell guys to either hire someone or really, really study and focus on learning the way your body responds to certain foods and just getting better at, you know, it's not easy, but the best thing you could do is just hire someone if you can afford it. And there's tons and tons of coaches out there that, you know, don't charge too much. Just like if you're new to the gym, odds are you'd hire, you know, a personal trainer. You're not just going to cut 20-15 pounds, you know, in 8 weeks blindly. And fighters being hard-headed, lot of the time, and they try to do it themselves. But yeah, the goal is to change the culture of that, and slowly it's getting better. But the bigger and bigger the sport gets, you know, the more and more coaches and the more and more help people need. So I got to start getting better at putting more information out there and trying to do what I can to, you know, change that culture.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. So numbers matter. And also, if you didn't put in the work, don't get upset when you miss the target. I guess that's the takeaway there. Johnny, as a coach and also an announcer, I wanted to bring you in on this topic. Would you agree that it's a professionalism thing, that this is something that needs to be maintained year-round by the Fighters?
I think for me personally, 100%. I think being an athlete, making that contract the way like Ian talked about, it's all part of your job. You literally sign the contract and say you're going to make that weight. I think it falls on you to make that weight, to also maintain a level of professionalism, because you are a professional athlete, you are a professional, and everything in daily life should show that. And if you're not making weight and you're cutting corners, like Ian said, then, like you said, you're going to be the one paying.
Mm-hmm. Now, just throwing, if you don't mind, just throwing on your other hat, what are some things that can be done at a competition level, I guess, to change the culture like Ian talks about? Is there a mechanism in place that you think could be brought in, or is that something that may not have come to light yet?
Can you repeat that question, please?
What's something that can be done at a competition level, I guess, to help keep fighters in the lane of making weight?
Well, I think the big penalty when you miss weight is obviously a big factor, and also a lot of opportunities are dependent on your ability to be a professional, to make that weight and to show up and fight and put on a great performance. If you have a terrible camp, your diet's not well, you go up to the fight, number one, you're probably not going to fight. Number two, when you miss weight, the organizations really take it very seriously and take it as disrespectful, take it as unprofessional. So you might be really chomping and denying yourself opportunities. So I think if you're a professional and you take it seriously, there's no other need for an incentive. You know what I mean? You should be doing it for yourself, for opportunities.
Absolutely. And one thing our listeners should be doing is following both of you on social media. So I'll start with you, Johnny. Where can our fans and listeners find you on social media?
I'm easy. I'm just Gianni Suva on all social media. Very easy to find.
All right. Chef Ian, where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, it's Chef Laria. I think that's the only social media that I have. I'm not smart enough to have like TikTok or
I've seen those pictures, by the way. You're selling yourself short, by the way. You got some excellent food photos, and you got some of the best fighters in the world. Don't worry about whatever you may not know about TikTok just yet. You're doing just fine. You're doing very well for yourself. Both of you actually doing very well. You've set up the connection out there in Bali. You got a gym. It looks like the next wave of fighters could be coming out of Southeast Asia, and the restaurant serving food that you serve to fighters, and you've avoided winter. I think that's the key thing. You've got the forever summer climate out there, so you guys are winning. You guys are winning.
Sure, a little bit of heavy rain once in a while, but yeah, not that bad.
Take rain over cold any day of the
week. Yeah, yeah. You can sweat. You can sweat out the humidity. It's all good. It's all good. And that's the game. We've reached full time on this episode of Pro Source Podcasters. Your enthusiasm and support drive us forward, and for that, we're really grateful.
If you've enjoyed today's journey through the thrilling world of sports, please consider leaving us a review. Your feedback not only helps improve us, but also connects us to the community.
So don't forget to visit our website at prosportspodcasters.com.
For exclusive content, episodes, and the latest updates in the realm of professional sports, where no sport is left behind.